Cool. Thank you, Laura.
Okay, so we are back for our last agenda item, Portland Design Commission on Thursday, the 18th of June, 2020. And we are going to have some conversation with staff from the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability about the recommended draft of the citywide design guidelines, part of the DOSA program that we've been working on for several years now. So let's start with introducing staff who have joined us, staff from BPS. I will pick someone to begin. I choose Laura to begin, and then Laura, you hand off.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. Cool. Good evening, and happy to join you. My name is Laura Lillard with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, Urban Design, and I have been working with you all on this project. I'm very excited about tonight, and I am going to hand this off to my colleague, Phil Namany.
I thought you were just going to introduce us all. I'm Phil Namany, also with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. And I am here to support Laura and answer any questions that might come up or other things that might relate to the zoning code portion of the DOSA project. But for the most part, I will be muted and listening in. Sandra?
Hello, and I'm Sandra Wood with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. And I wasn't going to be here today because I had a council meeting, but it ended at 3:30.
Oh, good for
so
you.
I am very excited to be here because I'm excited to see where you all take these final amendments and hopefully a final vote. And I am going to pass it on to Eli Spivak, who is the chair of the PS Planning and Sustainability Commission, and will be joining us today.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for including me in. I look forward to mostly listening. We're excited to have this project heading to council soon, and I thought we had a lot of amendments, but you have like 120 or something. So, and also thanks for taking this on at the end of a long meeting you've already been going on today. So I'll mute myself most of the time, but if you have any questions about the Planning and Sustainability Commission side of this, just let me know. Thanks.
All right. Good to see you, Eli. Thanks for joining us. Okay, is there anyone else to introduce?
Stacy?
Thank you. Good afternoon. Stacy Monroe with BDS, and I'm just here to support the Design Commission should any questions come up about the next steps.
Great. Okay, very nice to see you, Stacy. So when we begin DOSA discussions, every time we begin a DOSA discussion, we have some disclosures. And while it's not really clear at this point whether or not proposed changes create potential conflicts of interest for Design Commission members, the changes really affect a very broad class of property owners. In the interest of transparency, let's ask all commissioners to disclose whether the commissioner owns property in the D overlay, or if the commissioner works for an architectural or real estate development firm that conducts business in the city of Portland. And we're gonna just run through people in the order that you show up on my display. So Jessica Molinar.
I work for an architecture firm that does work within the city of Portland.
Okay, Commissioner Zantner? You are muted. I'm going to take you off mute.
Oh. Did you hear me?
There you go. Okay. Yeah. Nope. One more time, please.
Okay. I do not work for anybody. I do not have a conflict of interest.
Great. Thank you very much. Commissioner Rodriguez?
I am a partner on multiple projects in the Central City and in the city of Portland. So, but I have no conflict with making these decisions.
Very good. Okay, Commissioner Robinson?
I do not own property, but I do work for a company that does work in Portland and works in the design overlay.
Great. Commissioner Ballister?
I own property in the D zone, and I have done
projects in the city of Portland in the D zone also.
Okay, thank you very much. Commissioner McCarter?
I work for an architectural company that does work, a lot of work in the D zone of the city of Portland.
Okay, and I work for a real estate developer that also does work in the D overlay. Okay. So Laura, today's gonna look a little bit different than most DOSA conversations we've had to date. Would you walk us through what we're gonna do today?
Of course I will.
Thank you.
Okay, so this is a little bit different because there are so many votes. I sent you all a table on Monday. And I am going to share that my screen with you so that we can all just kind of walk through it together when we get started. And as I mentioned in my memo, there are two categories of amendments that we'll be voting on today. So one is the consent items. And when I sent you the table, those were all of the items in the table that weren't shaded. And it was most of them. I think there were about 45 of those. And those really reflect minor amendments that we worked on together during our last work session, so they shouldn't come as a surprise to you. Or they reflect minor amendments that Commissioner Livingston proposed in an email she had shared. She wanted to do some wording changes, and those were fairly minor. They didn't change the intent of the direction of the text, so I didn't highlight those either. So. We would ask before we, so we're going to vote on all of those together, but before we do, we'll ask if any commissioner has seen that table and wants to pull something off of that list for further discussion before we vote on it. And in that case, we just won't vote on it at the time, but we'll go ahead and vote on the remaining items. So that's kind of the first bundle of things. That can go really fast or it might not. So the second category of amendments are discussion items, and there are four of those that I highlighted in the memo, and those reflect just larger amendments that needed more discussion, and maybe it was a continuation in some cases. So there were three amendments that are related to a discussion that we had at our last work session, and so I kind of want to talk about all of those together before we vote on those. And then there was one other item that's related to character statements, and it's brand new and you haven't seen it, so thought we would give that some breathing room. So we will, I'll describe each of those one by one, and we'll, you know, I'll share my screen so you can look at what that amendment is. We'll have time for discussion, and then we will vote on each of those one at a time. And included in that voting one at a time is anything that you all decided to pull off of consent.
So we will, we will vote on consent, and then we will vote on each item that we have discussed. Okay, gotcha.
Correct, one at a time. So I'll go over the first item in gray, we'll have a discussion, the direction will go where it goes, and then somebody will call a motion to make that amendment where you land. It might be exactly as it's written at the table, it might be with some tweaks. And we'll just go ahead and vote on that. And then we'll move on to the next item and I'll describe it and it'll go like that. So we'll do that round about at least four times because I've highlighted four items, but you all may pull something from the consent list. And so I would add to that round, whichever item that you've pulled as well. Okay. So at least we're gonna do that four times. Does that make sense to everybody? Okay. And then following that, we'll vote on the entire package because there's direction that you all need to give staff. And I'll go over that when we get there, but it's basically just you're preparing us to move forward to City Council. So there's language there and we'll talk about that at the time. So far so good?
Okay, very good.
Okay. All right, so let's move on to the consent list, and I will take this moment to share my screen. Can you all see that?
Yep.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, so this is what it looks like, and you all hopefully got it and checked it out, and you notice that I've got a lot of, most of it's white because I didn't feel, like I said, like these were major things. And then I have four that are in gray. So I guess the first question is, does any commissioner want to pull an item off of this consent list before we vote on the bundle of unshaded items?
Laura, there are actually two items that I don't necessarily want to pull off, but I need a little bit of clarification.
Okay.
Does that automatically push those items into the pull off the consent list?
I think so.
Category?
No.
No? Okay.
Sandra says no.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
She's our expert.
Okay. So let me tell you what they are, and I will also tell you what my question is.
And
first is item number 23. And Zeri, this is the language that you asked to have added to enhance local commerce. I think we need to talk about that a little bit more. I think we need to talk about that a little bit more. And be sure that we're getting it right.
Okay.
So it sounds like you do want to pull that one off.
That one I do want to pull off of consent.
Okay.
So I will add that.
This next one is a clarification. Item number 25, under the paragraph, publicly accessible spaces, after designs should support safety and be well integrated into the site with active adjacent buildings and programming, add and openings. And I think you're telling me that the end of that sentence is just extending so that it reads building programming and openings, but I want to be sure.
That's correct.
Okay. Okay. And Jessica, that was your suggestion, and that is your intent, and that reads well from your perspective. Yeah. Okay.
Sorry, I'm on mute.
Yeah. But you're nodding. That's totally fine.
Yeah.
Okay, very good. So no reason to pull that off of consent. I just wanted to be sure I understood.
Okay. So we have number 23. Are there any other items?
Item number 16, I think, I don't think I expressed myself very well last time. But the intent really wasn't for an elegant dropped main entrance. It was really that the entry aligns with the lower grade, that the storefront at the lower grade is really what's expressed. That makes more sense. Elegant dropped main entrance to me is not very clear.
It's not clarifying. Yeah, right. Okay.
Words are very subjective.
So let me pull this off consent and we can just work on that language together. And I think that one will be pretty.
Yeah, it'll be pretty,
pretty easy.
Pretty easy. Yep.
Okay. Any other items?
Well, the other things that I have noted for discussion are not on consent. So I'm good. Other commissioners, anybody have anything else to add?
I do not.
Okay.
No. Okay.
Okay, so here somebody would need to make the motion. To move to amend the revised proposed draft with the amendments shown in the table, except for number 8, 10, 13, 16, 23, and 49.
Okay, may we have both a motion and a second?
I move.
Sorry, who's that second?
I did, but Sam did also.
I think that's Don. So Zeri made the motion and Don seconded.
Okay. Commissioner Robinson.
Yes.
Commissioner McCarter.
Brian, you have to vote.
Yes, sorry.
Okay. Commissioner Molinar?
An enthusiastic yes.
Hold on, I got to write that out. And Chair Rodriguez?
Absolutely yes.
Oh my gosh. And Chair Julie.
I also vote yes.
Okay, that's 7 in favor.
Okay. Okay, so we're gonna move to the items for discussion, and we're just gonna do this where I describe, we discuss, and we vote or make a motion. Okay, so number 8, and you can see this here. So there were actually 3 amendments that I made that relate to the conversation that was really interesting that Commissioner Santner started us all off on. This was to me about the ongoing tension between new development and the existing historical, socioeconomic, and cultural context of the area. And what are we saying about it? And I have just been reflecting in these days on where we are in 2020 and at this moment, and knowing that new development has played a role of disproportionately impacting communities of color and resulting in the loss of character and the inclusion that existed. And we've heard this again and again when we've engaged the public, and I heard commission concern during their last work session. And so even though this wasn't, this particular spot in the guidelines wasn't actually suggested by the commission, I thought it was appropriate given all of the discussion that we had at the last work session to just acknowledge this at the citywide level. The city has an opportunity here to formally acknowledge its own institutional role in this conflict by just naming it and offering commissioners the space to consider how applying guidelines, including guideline 1, but not limited to guideline 1, recognize and prevent community loss. So we offer this amendment, and I'm happy to read it. And this is on page 7, and it's under the Portland's citywide context. And it's the second paragraph, last sentence. And the text in bold is the new text. Though the city's overall geography and its history are intertwined and unique, Portland's neighborhoods and streets each have distinct histories and geographies that are as rich and diverse as its natural setting. It should be acknowledged that development has played a role in erasing the uniqueness and culture of the city's beloved places, upholding or exacerbating racial disparities and worsening barriers to opportunities for communities of color. While Portland continues to embark on self-reckoning over past harms, these guidelines should be used to ensure that places undergoing change and transformation will intentionally promote an anti-racist built environment that honors and preserves the history and culture of communities of color and fosters a sense of place and belonging. So I would open up the discussion.
Shall I begin? I welcome anyone else to begin, but in the absence of somebody jumping in, here we go. Laura, I really very much appreciate the sentiment that is expressed here, and it's a very important thing to say. As I read it, two thoughts occurred to me. And since I read it earlier this week, and then again this morning, I have had a very brief conversation with Sam, and he made a very good point during that conversation, which is that we are in a period of very heightened political sensitivity right now. And that makes me think that the sentence, while Portland continues to embark on self-reckoning over past harms, is a very politicized statement. And maybe it doesn't belong, or if it does belong, maybe it needs a little extra context. An acknowledgement that when these guidelines were drafted, we were in a period of great change in the city of Portland. It seems a little bit. I don't even know what to say. It seems out of context with guidelines. And yet we all want to do as much as we can to recognize that we need to do better. So, you know, I think the language just isn't quite right. To that, I would add, and here I'm going to exhibit just immense ignorance, and I invite anyone to jump in and correct me, shoot me down, offer to find me some counseling. I worry that the term communities of color will also date. And I don't know what is a different, better term, but it seems to be very rooted in this time. And for that reason, it seems risky. So I think there's, you know, the potential language pitfalls in this.
I mean, I think I would agree with you, Julie, that while Portland continues to embark on self-reckoning over past harms, maybe it's too much to say that, you know, we're in this process, right? Because we aren't necessarily, like, you know,
people are saying,
oh, we've done something bad, but that doesn't mean that anyone's doing anything about it. We're not, there's no self-reckoning going on. I mean, it's like, I mean, I don't know what the percentage is of people who are engaged in this kind of conversation, but I think it's too far to say that. Sorry, now my dog is barking at me.
Not like my dog. No.
Commissioner Ballister, were you? Oh, you were talking about the dog. Sorry.
Well, I was talking about the dog. Okay. Yeah, I think we have to be a little bit careful about being too specific about this particular time, because this time is going to pass. So what's the residue going to be of all this? And is this going to still be appropriate language 2 years out, 5 years out?
Well, I love that it's in here. I want it. I'm very happy that it's in here. When I think about the work that we've been doing for DOZA, we've been massaging these guidelines to give people really clear direction on what we want them to do, what is good for the city, what is good for the public realm. So even though we're putting this sort of in the, you know, city context section, I feel like it wants to say, how is it that you don't gentrify? How do you not eject people from their neighborhood because prices are rising and they have to move away? How do you keep space? How do you hold space for the communities that were there before? It doesn't matter who they are, right? It's poor folks of any color who then can't afford the new rents, right? So, maybe not saying communities of color, but, you know, the existing communities, whoever they are. It's so great that it's in here, and I want to work on it so that we get it to a place where we're really acknowledging development is great. We like to see change. We like growth. We like people to have economic success and have that creep out, you know, farther away from the center of the city. But we also want to hold space for the people who are already there. And I'm not sure what else to say. I mean, if other folks want to chime in, maybe I'll think of something more clear that I can offer
I'm wondering if it should refer to marginalized communities, you know, something a little broader.
Yeah, I agree with that. More disenfranchised communities, because I feel like we're underrepresented, because I feel like we're leaving people out who really this applies to as well. Other communities of different groups of people that have kind of been affected the way that this paragraph is speaking to.
I agree with you guys. I think the core idea in here for me is the part that says these guidelines should be used to ensure that places undergoing change and transformation will intentionally promote a built environment that honors everyone.
Yeah, you know, right.
All races and all cultures of the city, and fosters a sense of place and belonging for all citizens. And now, you know, maybe that's too watered down. I don't know, but I just like to cast the net to really encompass, you know, everybody.
Brian, I really appreciate your point that the language itself can be welcoming and all-encompassing.
Yeah. You know, ASLA, for instance, has just put out some sort of a post now, and I haven't had a chance to read it, but it's about, you know, landscape architects and you know, unintentional bias or you know, things that people carry into their sense of design without really even knowing it, and it's trying to draw light to that. And I think in some ways that's what this is trying to say, is you need to be mindful of a lot more things than you maybe currently are.
Well, I have a couple of thoughts. I mean, I want to hear, but just to give you, I guess, just to frame this a little bit, originally when I wrote this, it wasn't here. It was as a foreword. I was writing a foreword to the document, which maybe does speak to this moment. But it felt funny coming from the author. I was writing it as though I were a design commissioner. I was like, if I was a design commissioner, this is what I would want people to know right now. Like, this is how I feel about how these guidelines should be used. And so I wrote it, and we discussed, does a document need a foreword and an introduction and a preamble and, you know, all of these things. And so it felt like this is our city. This is a citywide context, and it could live here. And we massaged it a little bit, and we put it here instead. I do think about the timeliness of it, and I know it seems political and we're in this moment, it feels different. But I also think, like, if we had written this 30 years ago, where it was also a moment 30 years ago, and that's about how long these documents last, this would still be relevant. This is still important work. And not only is it important for us to point fingers at other bureaus like you have seen, you know, what's the police role in these tensions? You know, what is the planning and sustainability's role in these tensions? You know, so this is just kind of owning that we have a slice in this work. And so what are these guidelines doing to forward and a built environment that welcomes marginalized communities? I just feel like it's really acute to the conversation that we had earlier. And then I want to share with you that there was an early on joint equity review of this document by BDS and VPS. We had two equity managers, and they looked through the document and they offered a lot of criticism. And one of the criticisms was, you know, this is a race neutral document, right? Intentionally, it is fairly generic. These are not guidelines for a specific place. This is citywide. So there was always that, you know, this is not place specific. It's not geographically specific. That was intentional. But I thought that was really poignant. Incidentally, we didn't do anything about it because there, except for we have added language about, and you might recall, having in the context of a place sharing histories of underrepresented communities and making sure that our public spaces are welcoming to the most vulnerable population. So we did start to add in that language. But again, you know, I don't know that they would have look at the new language and say, is that still, you know, is that still race neutral? And so that was something that I took with me, and I thought about you all in this conversation that we always have about, is that approval criteria, is putting that in approval criteria. So I very intentionally put this here where it's sort of a framing device so that you all have the space to talk about how a place is changing and transforming over time and who it's welcoming for, because I think it's so important that you have the opportunity to have license to talk about it, even if it's not specifically listed in the approval criteria, because I know that's tricky. So that's my context for you.
And I agree with you. I so agree with what you just said. I mean, we do need to have a path to talk about this in the hearings room. We absolutely do.
By putting it in a guideline, it gives a little bit more gravitas than in some sort of an introduction in the front end or something.
I mean, yeah. The problem Brian, I agree with what you're saying to try and make it more inclusive, but then the problem with from the time we're living is that politicization is happening no matter what we do, no matter where you go. Yeah. I mean, does it get accused of being like, oh, you're not specific enough? So maybe it has to play both roles. Maybe it has to say something to the effect, all communities, especially those disenfranchised, or especially those, I mean, you know, with giving a bow the hat to the minorities that have been overlooked, right? And that have been possibly mostly affected by development, by the process.
You know, to Laura's point about wanting this to, you mentioned, Laura, how we might use these as design commissioners. And the thought occurs to me on the flip side of this argument that, you know, it could be that a development proposal before us, it would do more for underrepresented communities of color. It might do more for them if this development wasn't even proposed.
Right.
Rather than trying to affect the design, it'd be better if the development just went away. And I'm not sure we can use guidelines to make a development go away. Our role is to try to make development better. So that's a question about how we would use this as a guideline.
But because it's in the introduction, to Laura's point, I think putting it in the introduction is really the best place for it, because I think it explains the mindset and kind of the base point of where we went to with all of the guidelines without actually making it a guideline. So you can still talk about it, but I think you're right, it would be tricky to turn it into approval or not approval or eliminating a project based on this, but it would at least give an opportunity to have that conversation and then to frame the conversation along that kind of mindset, if that makes sense.
It does.
And I think it's in the right location. I just think that the language is possibly going to date. Maybe placing us in a context that we aren't really sure we're actually in right now. It's making some assumptions that I'm not sure should be made.
Well, you know, when I'm thinking about this, it just says kind of to me that everything should be the D overlay so that the public can weigh in on it and we do more outreach to all the communities, because just because I'm Black and I'm Latina, that doesn't mean I can speak for the community that any one building is going into just because there's someone representing that part of that culture in the room, right? It's about hearing the voices of a lot of people. And so that's why we have the hearings and the public is involved. And so now I'm kind of having a hard time with that, right? It's like, maybe that's where some of this text goes, is explaining why it's so important to involve the public and to reach out to the neighborhood groups that we've talked about. And that if you want to do something, you should do it through design review if it's different than the guidelines, because that really gives the communities an opportunity to participate in it. And perhaps we'll reduce the effects, you know, the way that gentrification affects neighborhoods, right? And it's not saying, like, if you buy this piece of property where there used to be a little Mexican store, that you have to make room for that little Mexican store in your new building, whatever your new building is, right? It's not getting super specific about what you do to reduce the effects of gentrification on the community and how it's spread out. But it says, here's why design review and public testimony are so important.
Can I chime in here?
Please.
Laura, I appreciate your effort, and I think the idea of having an overall statement about being intentional about past mistakes that I personally think, even from design perspective and from perspective of changing the nature and character of neighborhoods we have made, should be acknowledged. And the city as a whole has decided that we want to make sure that we are a diverse city and we want to be welcoming to diverse communities. And we want to make sure that they feel comfortable. They feel a sense of belonging in this city, in their neighborhoods. And that for centuries now, this city, along with a lot of other American cities, you know, we have chosen a Eurocentric approach to design and urban design in achieving some of the things that we want to create. And that is, in my view, very, very self-important in terms of that there is only one culture that could bring vitality and excitement and livability in the city. So I don't know what language you use. I think we need to be very clear, if we want to go that route, that we are frank and open to say, we've been going this route. And that route has been exclusionary. And we want to be inclusive. And to be inclusive, we need to be intentional. And to be intentional means that we have to do things certain ways. So I don't even worry about whether it's political or not. I don't worry about whether it's harsh or not. I don't believe that these issues that we are right now grappling with, and development would be part of it, is going to just go away in 10 or 20 years. So this is my house, by the way.
Are you burning your dinner?
I think my partner is burning the dinner.
Oh my God.
It's tough. So I do not think we should shy away from being honest and frank and clear and acknowledge that what we've been doing has not been as inclusive as we need to be and this direction that the city needs to take. I agree that using, you know, the communities of color, that is also becomes exclusionary. There, I think underserved, historically underserved, marginalized, I think it is more inclusive. We need to be using language that is inclusive, but also really very, very clear that going along the same way is not going to create that sense of equitable treatment that our community is now crying out for.
And I feel that this lens is not a guideline. It's sort of like in the application of these guidelines.
Absolutely.
Agreed. So,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Can I offer a couple of thoughts, Laura?
Please.
I think when you were brainstorming this, one of the things is page 7 talks about the Portland citywide context, uh-huh, and talks about the physical context, which I think is where designers and architects are kind of more comfortable, and certainly those of us who are also in the development industry, either writing regulations or implementing regulations, are comfortable in that realm. Our new purpose statement for the design overlay is to create a city designed for people. And that's certainly very inclusive also. So it seemed a little odd that our Portland citywide context didn't talk about people. And I recognize that talking about people and getting specific about different communities is not what we usually do, and it's a little uncomfortable. When we did the comprehensive plan, we talked about our language was very messy at the beginning. We decided to use the word neighborhoods for geographies, communities for communities of people. In the glossary of the comprehensive plan, I'm looking at it right now, the two definitions we have are underserved and underrepresented.
Right.
We need both of those terms, which were different. What we're hearing a lot now, and you're right, we are in this moment. I think Laura was considering how timeless is this language. And I agree, communities of color will probably come and go. Like the word citizen, the statewide planning goal number one is citizen participation.
Oh, huh.
In the city, don't use the word citizen anymore. It's community participation or community involvement, because we want to be welcoming to people who aren't citizens. So language ebbs and flows, but I think the sentiment of communities of color is something that is race forward, right? It's leading with race. And that's one of the things that communities are asking of us right now. The PALFS People Plan is asking for that. More people are pulling out the state of Black Oregon, specifically talking about Black populations at this moment in time. And so when Laura was talking about this, she's like, should I say Black? And that's really, you know, right now in this moment in time. And I wish I could say that communities of color or Black wouldn't be necessary to pull out, because in 3 years we'll be on to something else. But I don't think that's the case. And I don't think it should be the case. I mean, that's the fear right now, right? That everyone is out protesting and having these conversations, and that this moment passes and nothing changes. I think adding it to the document does a couple of things. It acknowledges it from an institution, and that goes a long way. That is part of self-reckoning. For the city to come out and say, we have a role in this, we are going to take responsibility for this, we are going to name this, is a step of self-reckoning. Maybe we don't want that word in here of self-reckoning over past harms. I'm not sure if I'm hearing that we're not sure we're going to fully self-reckon or what that conversation is. But I think putting it in here has value. Another thing is, I think city council, when this gets to city council, they're going to want something in here. And I would prefer that to be in your hands, you know, to decide, is it a guideline? Is it here? Is it somewhere else? So you can go to city council having had this conversation with a recommendation.
I'm with you. I think that's well said, Sandra. I think that being explicit is better than being a little bit anemic. I think then we just have to find enough words to put in there so that we feel like we're including all of the people, right? Because we should say Black if we mean Black folks. We should say, you know, folks from Mexico. We should, you know, whoever we're trying to include. I agree with you that, you know, saying just communities lets people interpret however they want, and it can give the effect that we're trying to appease or, you know, be sensitive to something without really taking a stand or without really saying like who we're talking about. And so I think what you said really, that means something, and I appreciate it. I would agree we add more language in.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think we can, it seems like we could achieve both goals by using and instead of eliminating communities of color. Yeah. Just say and underrepresented or underserved or marginalized, whatever words we want to use in addition to that, so that we include everyone but are still specific, that we, you know, mean communities of color are absolutely specifically included in this, or whatever groups we specifically want to be in that.
Can I make one comment briefly? I don't know if people can hear me. I love this discussion. We're about to have a parallel discussion at the Planning Sustainability Commission. This is specific to the DOZA project, but the other place this could happen is in the Title 33 section, where it says factor, I mean, if we're serious about this, factors reviewed during design review could include racial equity. It is not in there right now on that list. So if there's really gonna be a determination on some, in sort of the decision-making process you go through when you're reviewing projects, if race is gonna come in, which there's a good argument that it should, that actually, I think maybe be in Title 33. That may be too much of a bomb idea to drop now, but if you're talking about taking that into account in decision-making, and if it does come up in your reviews, then that might be the place to do it.
I do have to say that I also agree with Julie about the while Portland continues to embark on self-reckoning over past harms. That part just really sounds ultra political.
Yeah, I just don't
compared
know
to the
that.
Rest of the document. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would agree with that too. I think the first phrase, the more I read it, and if we add some additional and at the end of communities of color, it sounds really good. That second phrase is a little too charged politically, in my opinion.
Well, and it might just be adding more words again. As this document is drafted, it appears as if Portland may be embarking on a reckoning.
Is the word embark part of the issue? I don't know where I was going. Is the word embark the issue? Because I say that because it's like, it sounds like a moment we're embarking on something. As Portland continues to self-reckon over past harms.
We're only 3 weeks in. I mean, I do not know how this is going to play out. And when we are only 3 weeks in, it could be, 3 weeks from now, it might be all gone.
Yeah, and then we would not say it was a reckoning.
Yeah.
I feel like if we are silent, it for sure will not be a self-reckoning. So I guess I would just caution us, this is a moment to...
Well, then it needs to be rewritten. It needs to be rewritten so that we are not stating that we are in this moment when it isn't clear that we are. We are hopeful that we are. We are all really very hopeful that this is the time when times will change.
To me, self-reckoning sounds like a commitment to do something. That you've said to yourself, these are all the terrible things that I've done, and I recognize that, and I don't know that that's where all of Portland is.
Right, I think that's for me the issue with this statement is it's saying something about Portland that might be true in the parts or in the circles where people that we know might be talking about and thinking about. But not necessarily in the circles where we aren't, where we don't know what people are talking about or in favor of. I think we're blanketing Portland and hoping that we're all self-reckoning, but we don't know.
So it sounds like, just to keep us moving here, the first bold sentence that starts with, it should be acknowledged that development has played a role in erasing the unique and culture of cities' beloved places, upholding and exacerbating racial disparities and worsening barriers to opportunities for communities of color and underserved communities, period. That could be that first sentence, adding and underserved communities. And I guess I would say, why don't we stick with a definition we have, which is in the comprehensive plan, so we're not confused by that. And just so you know, that underserved is people in places that historically and currently do not have equitable resources, access to infrastructure, healthy environments, housing choices, etc. Disparities may exist both in services and in outcomes. That's the definition from the comp plan. And then what of like deleting the while Portland continues to embark on self-reckoning over past harms and just start it with these guidelines. So these guidelines should be used to ensure that places undergoing change and transformation will intentionally promote an anti-racist built environment that honors and preserves the history and culture of communities of color and fosters a sense of place and belonging. Now that one's more culturally specific in the sense of what Commissioner Santner was bringing up is that the default is a Eurocentric architectural design.
I really like the second sentence. Actually, I like almost all of it, just that one part that you already struck. I'm pretty happy with the rest.
Sorry, my blender's going. It's for a smoothie. I'm not anticipating.
Oh, margarita time.
Oh. I know, not yet.
It's dinner time right now.
Let me understand you, Commissioner Molinar. As it's written here with my marks in red, you're saying you support that because I've crossed out the piece that was causing
concern. I do too.
So I gotta say though, I've done just what for me is an extraordinary amount of reading over the past couple of weeks, and it is my understanding that communities of color is exclusionary. That term itself is by many people considered to be exclusionary.
And I'm not talking
about, I'm not talking about by white people. Communities of color, depending on where you sit and your perspective, you may not feel that you are included in communities of color.
Oh, although culturally you probably are.
Right. I worry about those words, that those are words that will date and will very soon not be in regular use. And
What do you propose, since you've done so much reading? What would be better? What would be a good replacement?
Apparently there is no right answer, right? Because no matter what you decide, somebody is left out. There's no way to cover everybody. They're just, how do you do that? It's a long list.
I was just going to ask if there was a definition for underrepresented communities, because we did use that phrase in one of the guidelines where we talked about history, and this is more related to culture, so that might be useful here.
So underrepresented is people and communities that historically and currently do not have an equal voice in institutions and policymaking, and have not been served equitably by programs and services.
Yeah, that should be an ad. It should be color, underrepresented, and underserved.
The culture of...
You're saying completely, you've got to get rid of communities of color, because if we leave that in, and then we add the other two, then have we captured almost everyone?
Don't know. And we want to be inclusive. So can we put the word inclusive in here somewhere? Is that also a dated word? It seems like we want to say we are trying to capture all of our people.
So we use the word belonging.
I think for me, the problem with underserved and underrepresented is that those are terms people are really familiar with without knowing the very specific definition that you've just read to us. And I think all the words in those definitions are really important, and I kind of want to, you know, copy paste them in here so that we're really clear about not just saying underserved and underrepresented, because then that is like, well, who are those people? Are they poor people? Are they brown people? Are they Quakers? Is it about religion? Like, who is it? I don't know. Then it's going to get all real long, but I feel like those definitions are pretty powerful, right?
Yeah, they are.
They absolutely are.
People really need to be included. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
let me just propose something. I'm like brainstorming here. We could add a period here. Not writing in red. And then use part of the definition that Sandra just read. For underserved. And then use the word inclusive. Something about something about the process of design review, or these guidelines should this is the problem with writing on the fly. So let me just read what it says. These guidelines should be used to ensure that places undergoing change and transformation will intentionally promote an anti-racist built environment.
I wonder if
Laura, I could put a period here.
Do you want to cut and paste this into an email to me? And while you continue on with the conversation for number 10, I can come back with a revised version based on what the commission has just talked about?
Sure.
Sure. Meaning I'm going to switch to this screen over here.
I know. And I'm going to open my Outlook.
You are great, Sandra.
So, yeah.
It's a good thing you were available.
I know. Seriously.
So glad you're not in council.
I really appreciate the discussion here and just the openness to this, because I know it feels like there's a lot of emotion here, but I just, I feel like we, in our last work session, there was just something that was unsaid.
Yeah.
That needed to be said. And so I appreciate Commissioner Santner for bringing that to our attention and kind of like motivating me to do that. I don't know if you can see all the screens that I've got open.
Yeah, well, you can.
Oh, great. Can. Awesome. Okay, I'm sending that to you now. And then I'm going to turn that off. Okay, so let's switch gears here. The next item was the actual change in the language that was discussed by Commissioner Santner. And we agreed together as a group that the last couple of sentences needed changes. So Commissioner Livingston has offered up these text changes. She had forwarded me this amendment. And it was the only one of her text amendments that I did not put consent to because of the discussion that it provoked. Last time. I would just invite you to speak, Commissioner Livingston, if you want to talk about this.
Well, I'm not sure that I captured the discussion well. So yeah, I would like other commissioners to weigh in on this. And then also the word eccentricity, increasing uniformity and loss of eccentricity across the city. I'm not sure that that's actually the right word.
Can I interrupt real quick?
Please.
I'm sorry. Laura, did you hit send?
Goodness.
Sorry.
Boy, oh boy.
It's always so much worse when you're doing it and people are watching.
And I'm just going to stop sharing. It's too much. Too many things. And I'm like, oh, what's showing on my, it's just too much. I did. It's under my set, but I'll send it again. Yep. Hopefully that comes up. Okay. I'm going to keep sharing and just Sandra chime in if you haven't gotten it. Okay. So why don't I read this, this paragraph. So it just kind of gets our mind jogging. And Sandra, in case you didn't get it, I'm going to scroll my screen down so you can read you got it. Okay, cool. Okay, so this is the third paragraph in the background. This is guideline one, just to orient everybody. And it's about Portland's pattern areas. Portland's pattern areas provide a basis for understanding the context of the city's past, present, and future, and the characteristics and aspirations of distinct and unique places. Building on the local identity of a pattern area is also an opportunity to engage the community in discussion about the contributions a development makes to the neighborhood, and a precaution against increasing uniformity and loss of eccentricity across the city. Over time, the changing face of new development should augment the character and nature of a place rather than deplete it.
I think you're right. Eccentricity sounds really strange, but uniqueness might be the right word.
Yeah, yeah. And I think I was looking for a word that was not used in paragraphs that surround this, right? So you don't end up reading the same word over and over. And I went to a thesaurus and I couldn't get there. So whatever works. If this is capturing the intent of the discussion, that word can be whatever it needs to be to read well.
Mm-hmm. I would take eccentricity out and either use uniqueness or character too, because eccentricity is a very specific, like on the edge of character. It's far to one side, and that's not necessarily the only thing that we want to preserve, and that's kind of what this is saying, or we're worried about losing. We're worried about losing that middle character, too, that isn't as eccentric.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. You know, when I talked about this, the whole notion was that there are areas that they have certain quirkiness. There are areas that the fabric is rich, but it sort of looks chaotic, feels chaotic, but it works. It really, I mean, when you go to Chinatown, New York, you can't find anything more chaotic than that, but it's vibrant, vital. And so, and then we had a little bit of that in our old town and we started working on it. It just all eroded away.
Yeah.
So that's what I was trying to convey, that I think the closest, if we don't want to use gentrification, the closest that could come word would be sanitizing it, you know, or again, using this Eurocentric approach of, you know, what is appropriate, what is vibrant. And so that was my intent. And I agree. I mean, I really looked at eccentricity. That is one component of it. But then you have to add a whole bunch of other words to it to capture all of it. So that will not do it.
I think you're describing it, but aren't you describing uniqueness, Sari? I know it's very hard to figure out exactly how to capture that in one word.
Yeah.
I have a thought. Commissioner Santner, you asked to put in the word authenticity. I don't know if that's the word here. It feels like that's what we're getting at. But
yeah, I think that
put
that
it
will,
here.
Right.
That word appears, more, sorry, that word appears in the appears, paragraph immediately prior.
Exactly. So I guess I would say if I put it here, I don't know, I could strike it from the place that it's at right now. Does that make sense? So right now, there's a sentence in the first paragraph that says, these features should be carried forward with authenticity, the quality of being genuine or real. That whole sentence could be struck if we moved authenticity here. Do you all need to see what I'm talking about?
I'm reading that and I support that.
Okay.
What about personality? Okay, I'm looking at this thesaurus myself.
Ooh, Portland personality. Ooh,
like,
throwback.
What's an antonym for unique?
I know. Somebody said unique character across the city.
The only thing is that character is then in the sentence that immediately follows.
And unique is in the sentence that immediately okay. precedes.
Maybe
that
we just means- have too many sentences.
Right.
We need to condense.
Well, I mean, the amendment I was suggesting, and can I ask, Phil, can I bother you to pull up the guidelines?
Are you wanting me to pull up and
the revised proposed design guidelines? I don't have that.
You're talking about this document?
Yes.
Okay.
The PDF for it.
Let me find it, and then Do you want me to send it to you or share the screen?
No, I think you should share the screen.
I already have it open. Do you want me to just share my
screen? Please do. Sorry, Phil. I didn't mean to put you on the spot. Yes, please.
Thanks, Jess. I can't until somebody lets it go.
Oh, let me do that real quick. It's all yours.
Awesome.
And then I can just talk through what I was talking about.
You mean here?
Yes. And if you just zoom in. So what I'm talking about deleting is the first sentence that's highlighted. So
these features should be careful.
No. I'm sorry. The very first sentence that's highlighted, which is the
these features.
Yes.
Right.
So this sentence goes away, and the word that Julie offered up, the loss of authenticity across the city, would be used instead of eccentricity.
Oh, in the new one?
Correct.
In the new paragraph for this?
Correct.
Ah, okay. Hey, if I email you a screenshot of this, can you put them together on your screen?
Sure, let's try it.
Okay. Because I didn't get a screenshot of what you just had up. Okay, I'm going to stop sharing.
Sent it.
Yep. You should get it. Oh, I see what you did. That makes sense.
Okay. Can you all see the screen share on top of the screen?
Yeah.
I can zoom in. Boy. Let me just close that. It didn't get any bigger. It's really small. I don't know if you all can see it.
No.
I can, but my screen's bigger.
Okay.
Oh, better.
Okay, let's see. So, I'm just trying to get us. Okay, so here we are. So this is how this will read. This will read, development should complement the place it inhabits. Place refers to an area's qualitative physical characteristics, such as the natural and built environment, and to an area's social characteristics, such as the histories, cultures, and needs of the communities it serves. By responding to place, development in Portland can represent and support its diversity, the diversity of its neighborhoods and the people who will continue to be a part of its evolution. Portland's pattern areas provide a basis for understanding the context of the city's past, present, and future, and the characteristics and aspirations of distinct and unique places. Building on the local identity of a pattern area is also an opportunity to engage the community in discussion about the contributions a development makes to the neighborhood, and a precaution against increasing uniformity and loss of authenticity across the city. Over time, the changing face of new development should augment the character and nature of a place rather than deplete it.
Touchdown.
Yeah, I think that's good.
Great.
Okay, so this...
Zeri? I want to be sure Zeri's good with it.
Yeah, I'm fine with it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so this amendment would be to strike, I don't know if I need to spell it out here, or if we can, if somebody can strike last sentence in first paragraph. And then this, I'd replace this with authenticity. So that's what we would be doing here. And how this works now that we've got, I think, where folks are comfortable, somebody would need to make a motion to move to amend the revised proposed draft with amendment number 10, as we have written here.
Okay, and Tim Herron is still here, so we've got Tim here to do roll call for us when we get there. Right on, good to see you, Tim. Okay, so we need a motion and a second.
I motion that we adopt amendment 10 as written.
I second.
So I will ask Commissioner Vallister.
Yes.
Commissioner Robinson.
Yes.
Commissioner McCartner.
Yes.
Commissioner Molinar.
Yes.
And Chair Livingston.
I vote yes.
Great, that's seven.
I think that was five. I counted five.
Sorry, I counted the motion and the second as yeses, but I could call on.
Gotcha, okay.
Sorry, let me double down. Commissioner Rodriguez.
Yay.
And Commissioner Santner.
Yes.
Cool. Motion passes.
Great. How's Sandra doing?
Do we want to go back to the one that Sandra was looking at?
Yeah.
It's on my screen. I think I'm sharing it already.
Yes. And you might be sending me back to the drawing board, so thanks. So this is amendment number 8. I just divided it into 3 sentences so we can talk about first, second, third, and just see it more easily. We can format it later. So 2 observations. Regarding using the words communities of color, I don't disagree that that might be a difficult, you know, wording right now. But in the absence of a perfect word, I don't know what else to use. I've heard a lot of like Black Indigenous people of color. That's become very popular, BIPOC, but that is also comes and goes. So I think we should maybe use the philosophy of not let perfection get in the way of intent. And honestly, if we have further conversations about this or something comes up in the next 8 months, we can ask council to propose an amendment to those words. I suspect that they're going to be dated in 2 years anyway.
Yeah.
So that's my thinking about communities of color. My other thinking is, and I wrote the I copied and pasted the definitions from the comprehensive plan for underserved and underrepresented. I think what we're talking about for design review is underrepresented people. Partially because I think about Williams Avenue and I think design review has served communities in the area, you know, the heart of the Black community in Portland, but I don't think they were represented in the work or in the conversations. So that's why I picked underrepresented. Also, I think the underserved, you know, it's for the comprehensive plan where we talk about infrastructure a lot.
Right.
So there's lots of places like in Southwest that are underserved by sidewalks and paved streets. But that's not the people of color that we're talking about. So for that reason, I picked underserved and let go of I picked underrepresented and did not incorporate underserved. So that was my thinking with the 3 sentences. So the first sentence you've seen before, and that was already in the guidelines. The second one was adding and underrepresented communities at the end, like we discussed previously. The third one was deleting the in this moment of reckoning that no one seemed to feel comfortable with. And it starts with these guidelines should be used to ensure that places undergoing change and transformation will be inclusive and foster a sense of place and belonging. So I pulled that up. So this is like, we want everyone to be included. They should also intentionally promote an anti-racist built environment that honors and preserves the history and culture of communities of color and underrepresented communities. So it's the, what you were, I think you were, you know, the yin and the yang. Let's be inclusive of everyone, but let's pay special honor and attention to underrepresented communities of color being race forward.
I'd like to propose that we have every commissioner weigh in on this before we get to the motion and the second and the vote, just to be sure that everybody is good with it. And if it's okay, I'll just call folks in the order that they appear on my display, beginning with Commissioner Molinar.
I think it meets the intent of what we've been trying to adjust the paragraph to.
Okay, Commissioner Robinson.
I think undergoing change and transformation, those two words mean the same thing to me. Maybe only one of them needs to be in there, change or transformation. And then the last sentence of that paragraph, they should also intentionally promote an anti-racist built environment that honors and preserves history and culture of communities of color and underrepresented communities. Are we saying that the development should intentionally promote the an anti-racist built environment, like in yes. that specific location?
Yes.
Because if we're saying it's in that specific location, then it wants to honor and preserve the history and culture of whatever communities are there or were there and have a history. I feel like that it's not quite clear. And it's that same last part of the sentence as the paragraph above, which I know we're trying to get both of those in there. Let's see, what am I thinking it wants to do? The guidelines should be used to ensure that.
I think part of the reason it's reading that way is because we're reading one sentence, we're reading them all separately. Like if you read it all together, it makes a lot of sense, because before that you're talking, like in the sentence before that, you're talking about the development. So these sentences apply to that same sentence above. It's just we've separated them out. So then you're kind of like reading it independently.
Can I just say one thing? The they there, it is a little, this is a good question, because there's places and then there are these guidelines.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's a good
so
point.
So yeah. When I read that, I thought the guidelines should also intentionally promote an anti-racist or the application of the guidelines, but maybe we do mean places. So we may have to spell out what the they.
I read they as referring to the guidelines.
I do as well.
That was my intent.
Okay. Do we need to spell that out? Or say application of the guidelines, or are you guys good with they means the guidelines?
I mean, if you wanted to be really explicit, you could just change it to the guidelines should also intentionally promote, but I'm not I get it the way it
I'm just gonna highlight
reads
that
right well. Now.
But it's actually the response to the guidelines.
Right. We're talking about the response to the guidelines.
So we should just be clear.
Yeah, I think okay. so, because okay. if we all have different opinions, so well.
Okay.
Yeah.
I could so be okay with that.
I'm going to write this. It's all caps all the time.
And then I take Chandra's point that these two sentences end with the same phrase, communities of color and underrepresented communities.
Mm-hmm.
Really close together.
Sometimes, though, in language like this, you sometimes have to explicitly repeat something. I mean, I've seen that in writing before.
I didn't know how not to repeat it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay.
The other part, I guess, so these guidelines should be used to ensure that places undergoing change will be inclusive. I feel like it should be something like the guidelines should be used to ensure that, you know, the changes that places undergo are inclusive. It's somehow like what you're changing is making it inclusive, instead of these places that any change is happening should be, I think it maybe needs to be more explicit. I'm not sure how that.
Well, what about if you, the part you have highlighted, what if it said they should also be used to intentionally promote an anti-racist?
Yeah.
Instead of the response? Huh. And you see where it says the response to guidelines, then we don't have to repeat that. So right there said they should also be used.
Yeah.
The guidelines should also be used to intentionally promote an anti-racist built environment.
Right.
That honors and preserves the Asian culture of the communities of color and underrepresented communities of that area. I think maybe that's still not as clear to me, the way that it ends exactly the same. We're saying that this new built environment that is intentionally anti-racist, it's who is it honoring, right? It's place-based. It's about that site and whether that site previously had a Black neighborhood or if it was, you know, a Native American, you know, special place, or I don't know.
So could we end that sentence with honors and preserves localized history and localized culture and just call it good?
I think that would work for me because I do feel it's important to talk about that specific place, because then people are going to say, well, I put a salmon on my building and that honors the Native Americans, even though it's not, it doesn't have anything to do with
Native peoples.
Okay, the whole they should also be used to intentionally promote an anti-racist built environment, etc. That to me now is confusing, because I feel like, how do you use the guidelines to promote something that's not really, guidelines aren't a promotion tool. Yeah. That's not really what they're for. So it made more sense to me when it was the response to the guidelines needs to be intentional about promoting the anti-racist built environment, et cetera.
I'm still having trouble figuring how do you do that with the guidelines. I mean, seriously, I mean, I hate to, you know.
But this isn't a guideline, it's the introduction.
Yeah.
I know, but it's basically saying that we need to use the guidelines to promote this, right? It's all you, that intentionally we need to look at it to promote an anti-racist built environment. I'm not sure how you do that.
Well, it could be something where we're recommending or nudging a developer, you know, instead of tearing this portion of the site down, maybe you need to find a way to repurpose it or renovate it and bring it into your project, bring it into the rest of your project. I mean, I can kind of see how you could use this guideline to nudge a proposal in that direction.
So I'm looking at the people's plan, PALF's people plan.
Yeah.
You know, and they call specifically in their vision statement for Black Portlanders want and need to be reflected in our city and to have the sacredness of our history and culture recognized. We can make Black Portland visible in the fabric of the city by recognizing Black communities as valuable and meaningful and asserting the right of Black people to be in a place and to be reflected in a place and to shape community and neighborhoods. Urban design, arts, public spaces, and community events should honor history and culture in a meaningful, not superficial or stereotypical way. Existing public art by and for Black community must be preserved. And it goes on, right? So I think that's a little bit what we're trying to get at, like where's the place for different cultures? And I think Chandra's right, it is localized culture. To have a voice in the guidelines.
Art from Northeast Portland and Beaverton or something, you know, like it's about that, the history of the area. And I think that, you know, saying promoting an anti-racist built environment or creating an anti-racist built environment, I mean, that's aspirational, right? It means you got to do some research. You got to read books and figure out how to not be, how to be an anti-racist and what that means for the work that you do every day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of great.
So can I give you a sort of small example of, you know, that relates to physical development and change? Portland Park, for many, many, many years, used to have barbecue pits in all of our parks. And then they were vandalized, they became such a huge issue, and they were set on fires or whatever. So they totally eliminated them. Then the African American community came to Portland Parks, and at Dawson Park, it's a park that is at the heart of, in the heart of the Portland Black communities.
Yep.
And it was their living room. It was just like the collective living room. And the barbecue pit was just the whole focal point of people coming and picnicking, being together. So they came to us and they said, you know, you're taking this. This is your, you're taking away something that is so important to our culture, to our socialization and being together and celebrating together. And with all the headaches and problems and the issues that we had, we recognized that. We said, absolutely, this is critical. So it's the only park in the city that has barbecue pits and still does, and people use it. So that is the whole point of it, is that when you are making physical changes, you look into history and culture, people who live there or used to live there, and get inspiration from it. And then find out what was important and build on it and use it. That's the whole essence of this.
Yeah. That's a great example.
Yeah. Yep. Thank you, Zeri.
That's great.
Yeah, I think it's a great example, but that's an example of the city as the city, all of us, being sensitive to all of us, I mean, and to specific communities within us, right? How do you take... a developer that buys, I mean, I'm just putting myself in the shoes of the other side of it, and I'll say this and then I'll shut up. How do you use the guidelines to, I mean, how do you achieve that as a developer that's going to build some apartment building? As simple as that. It's in North Portland, and it might be on Williams. I mean, how would you affect the projects that have been developed in North Williams to be anti-racist and more, how do you do that?
Well, you know, it comes to mind, Sam, is sometimes there will be a local retail establishment in an older building that's operating on probably fairly reasonable rent, and that building's about to be displaced by new development. And an enlightened developer might say, you know what, I'm gonna carve out enough space to keep that particular business here that the neighborhood loves. I'm gonna find a way to integrate something of the culture and the character of this area into this development.
The character I get, can you subsidize rent? Probably not.
Well, yeah.
So I think we're going to have to
decide
if we're going to, this is probably the most important conversation we've had during DOZA. So thanks very much. But we've got 30 minutes left. And so I want to be sure that everybody has the opportunity to weigh in on whether or not they agree with the proposed changes. So Chandra, I think you still have a reservation about the second paragraph. Don, have we heard from Don?
No, we haven't. Heard from me. Hey, as a white guy, I'm kind of staying out of it a little bit. I think the general direction is gone. It makes sense. I believe it is a point in time, and in 5 years, the point in time is going to change a little bit. This language can be changed at that point. But right now, I think the general concept works, and we should just go through with it. To Sam's point, I think it is really hard to take this language and do anything specific with it. There are small things can be done. Like there was the woman that had the building proposed on Williams Avenue, which she was going to take the name of her development or her mother's restaurant and put it, the Tropicana, and put it on the building and hopefully pick up some of that character of her mother's business. But that has not happened. So I don't know what the status of that is. But in general, I think we're never going to get this to be a timeless piece of introduction to the guidelines. And you just do the best you can and put it out, and let's just proceed on that basis, because this could take hours or a week to put it together to satisfy everybody. I'm happy with the way it's gone, and
I mean,
I don't approve it.
Okay. Brian, did you have a chance to weigh in?
I can go with the way it's currently written on the screen. I mean, somebody with real incredible English skills could probably put some polish on that, but I think it's I think we're capturing the ideas that we're all concerned about.
Okay. Okay, Chandra, I want to circle back around to any language concerns that you might have about that second paragraph. Could you tell us just one more time what you're worried about in the second paragraph?
Yeah, I'm just reading it again. And it was just about ending both of those paragraphs with, you know, the same like 6 words or 10 words or whatever.
So do you think it's okay to just end that second paragraph after local history and culture?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, that's
so good. Should it be local history and culture as opposed to localized?
No, I think localized is the better word, but I invite others to have a different opinion.
I agree. I think localized is more precise.
Yep.
For what we're talking about.
Yeah, it's finer grained. I can go with that.
Okay.
I didn't know if you caught this, but I hit the design response, and I don't know if that's the right, but I'm just, when we were talking, I threw that in there, so I wanted to make sure I saw that.
I think that works.
Yeah, I do too.
Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay, so I think we're there on this. And Sam, we have a majority without you. So if you are an outlier on this, that's...
No, I just don't know how it gets implemented that is significant.
Well, it's not a guideline. I think it's important that it's in the introduction. And the fact that it's not a guideline means it's something that we can talk about when it is appropriate to talk about.
And I think, Sam, I don't think you have to have all the answers. I think that's part of the public hearing process for the community to come forward and say, this is what, you know, the barbecue pits are super important to us.
Right.
And how can we incorporate that? Or, you know, it's a part of the collaboration.
There's no silver bullet. I think that's part of this, our citywide context.
Agreed.
So Laura, can you go ahead and just delete the gray paragraph so we don't have two repeats of the paragraph?
Yes, and all this other stuff so that they could actually vote on what's here. Okay,
yeah.
So somebody would need to make a motion to move to amend the revised proposed draft with the words on this.
For number 8, right?
For number 8, thank you, yes.
Cool.
I move to adopt the proposed amendments to 8.
A second.
Thank you.
I'll say.
Commissioner Chandra beat you to it, Don. Sorry.
I thought she didn't say anything, so. Good.
Tell me, Chandra, you were our second, correct?
I was a second, yes.
Okay,
I second.
Cool. Don, Commissioner Vallister?
Yes.
Commissioner Santner?
Yes.
Commissioner Molinar?
Yes.
Commissioner Rodriguez?
Yes.
Commissioner Livingston?
Yes.
And Commissioner McCarter?
Yes.
And Commissioner Robinson?
Yes.
Great. Passes. 7-0.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for going there with me. And now I need to figure out. Okay. So now I'm going to share the table again. We're moving on to number 13. And this is a change to that box in guideline one. We talked about this at length also last time, and at the time it felt like the commission really agreed with our rationale that the public is important and should be part of the conversation, but we were all kind of struggling with where how that interacted with the box. And so we just kind of left it. And then Commissioner Molinar did follow up with us and asked if we could find a way to weave it into the box without confusing the issue and making it very clear that the voices of the community alone are not approval criteria. So we've taken a crack at that, and it's not a bullet point. So in the box, it would read, just at the very beginning, as it describes the sources that are bulleted. So the beginning of that box, which describes how our character and local identity defined, this sentence would be there, and then that bulleted list would follow. And the two sentences read, applicants, decision makers, and the public can rely on several sources to draw inspiration, information, and guidance. These sources should be balanced with community voices that engage throughout the design process. So it's that second sentence that's added.
Thank you for doing that. I really appreciate it.
And the fact that it's not a bullet point,
yes.
It's a really good way to weave it in.
Yeah. Yes, it was very thoughtful. It's like magic.
Someone's dead.
Magic English.
Okay, is there any commissioner that does not agree with this proposed revision? Because if we are all in agreement, this is a really easy item, and we will take a motion and a second, and then we'll vote.
I
move that we accept this revision. This amendment.
Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. Commissioner Valliser?
Yes.
Commissioner Robinson?
Yes.
Commissioner McCarter?
Yes.
Commissioner Rodriguez?
Yes.
Commissioner Livingston?
Yes.
And Commissioner Santner?
Yes.
And Commissioner Molinar?
Yes.
Item 13 passes 7-0.
Excellent.
Okay, moving right along. I'm going to finish up with the very last item that I provided, and then we'll come back to the items that you all pulled from the consent list.
Got it.
All right. So this is item number 49. And this is just the fact that we needed to insert a new appendix and provide some language for the appendix that sort of sets the stage for character statements. So I provided in the appendix, in the attachment B, this new appendix A for character statements. And lost my script here. So this, again, creates that placeholder and describes what the intent of the character statement is.
Made perfect sense to me. I think it reads really well.
Yeah,
I agree.
Looks good.
Is there any commissioner that does not support this? Has any reservation? Anything else to toss in the mix?
I actually have something to toss in the mix.
Of course.
Of course I do. Sorry. I'm sorry. this isn't a huge, this isn't a colossal change, but I have been listening to my colleagues who are working through the character statement. As you know, you will hear one next month. I have another colleague who has been listening to community voices about the West Portland Town Center. And both of my colleagues have said to me, it's really hard to nail down this the idea of architecture when there is a place that may not have an established architectural character. It's a lot easier to think about the urban design response. Huh. And so I'm just putting this out there. You don't have to do anything with it now. Maybe you revisit it when you look at those character statements. But when I said to them, and this was just Monday, I said, would it have been easier if we had said architecture and urban design? And they said, yes, that would have been easier because a lot of things fall under urban design response. If you're looking for something that's already established that you can respond to. So I just put that out there. If you do think that that's something that we want to go with, then I also would need to probably amend a small part of page 21 in the guidelines. And I can show you where that is, but that's only if you want to go there.
So, okay. That makes sense to me. And I think that on this page, you would then amend the diagrams.
Yes.
And then there's also a paragraph then that calls out the three elements of the diagrams, and you would add urban design to that as well.
That's correct.
Okay.
That makes sense to me.
Is there any commissioner who doesn't agree?
No, I was going to say add landscape architecture, but urban design's just fine.
Okay, awesome.
Just poking fun at you architects.
Hey, I'm with you. I have a degree in landscape architecture. So here is page 21, where I feel like we would also need to reference it here. And we have community architecture and nature. By the way, they have said that these three headings really are helpful, that most of the comments about character really do resonate with folks. But that one piece about architecture sometimes just isn't that specific. I think it works in some areas where the architecture is super established and it's very meaningful, but it just doesn't work everywhere. So
By adding urban design, it seems like you would mention the public realm or something, taking cues from the desired character of existing architecture and public realm. I don't know if that's the right language, but somehow capturing.
I think urban design captures the building's response to the public realm without being mired.
Without
in
saying
like,
it.
Yes.
Okay.
So I guess I would propose in my 11th hour amendment here that it would read taking cues from desired character of existing architecture and urban design.
Okay.
And that here, okay. In this title, it would also say architecture and urban design.
That's a lot of architecture and urban design words right there together in that one header section. Taking cues from the desired character of, is there one other word that captures architecture and urban design?
The built environment.
Yes.
But all three of them say, they repeat, the title word is then repeated in the definition, but that makes sense.
Oh my gosh, you're right.
Yeah, I think that's how it should read. I mean, that makes sense.
The other two amplify it a little bit.
Oh, mm-hmm. That's true.
This one just,
repeats it. Yeah.
What did you say, Laura? Built form?
I said built environment, but it could
built
be built
environment.
Form.
I will buy built environment.
Yeah, same.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
So you are saying that we need to amend this highlighted phrase here to say built environment.
Yes, please. Zeri, do you weigh in?
I'm fine, but do we add to architecture urban design? The title will be, the bullet would be architecture and urban design, and then, okay. Yeah,
correct.
That makes sense.
Okay.
Yes.
So those would be my proposed amendments to page 21 that respond back to this character statement.
Hey, Laura, can I add one housekeeping measure?
May.
I don't know if we need to call out that it's Appendix A, at the end for the character statements, but if we are calling out Appendix A, then the box probably needs to say Appendix A as opposed to just the appendix.
Huh.
Oh,
so if we, only, if we only have one appendice, then we could just say that it's offered in the appendix under character statement and then have the appendix at the end, but we just have to be consistent.
Okay.
All right, Sam, you good with this? I'm not sure I heard you. Okay, very well. So I think then if everybody is in agreement, we are looking for a motion and a second on item number 49 and associated revisions to page 21.
So moved.
Do you have a second? Oh, I heard you this time, Don. Was that you, Don?
Yeah.
You got it. Okay. Commissioner Robinson.
Yes.
Commissioner McCarter.
Yes.
Commissioner Molinar.
Yes.
Commissioner Rodriguez.
Yes.
And Commissioner Livingston.
Yes.
And Commissioner Vallister.
Yes.
And Commissioner Santner.
Yes.
Motion passes.
Great. Okay, so we have two items that were pulled from the consent. One was, the first one is item 16, if we're going in chronological order.
Okay, let's do that.
Okay, so this is that caption, and Commissioner Molinar, if you don't mind, you were the one that you had pulled this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So,
this is just about the caption.
This while maintaining high visibility along ground floors with, oh, okay, so it would read designing buildings that integrate topography with an elegant dropped main entrance. This building's retaining walls support sitting and pausing within Western neighborhood centers. Yeah, I think it's just with an elegant dropped main entrance. I don't think, I see what your point was, and I know that we discussed that, but I think that the goal here is to say that the, man.
It's an entrance at grade. The thing that we're looking for is an entrance at grade, right?
I mean, honestly, I don't know that this photo is really about the entrance at grade so much as that it integrates the grades into the architecture well.
Yeah.
And they provide sitting and pausing, which is nice, right?
Can I offer a friendly amendment that
yes.
would maybe just... Could we just delete, I debated this, could we just delete the clause? Could we just say, designing buildings that integrate topography, period?
Yes, perfect.
This building's retaining wall supports sitting and pausing, because.
Yes, less is
I
more.
I almost did this and I felt like, no, I feel like we, so that
less
might be a way
more.
To handle it. Okay.
All right, Commissioner, does everyone agree?
Yeah, I have no issue with that.
Yeah, same here.
So I'm going to just change this to read, delete that last bit.
Perfect.
Nice.
Okay. So somebody would just need to move.
I move that we accept this revised language for item 16 on page 23.
Excellent. Do we have a second?
Second.
Sam got it.
Sam Rodriguez.
I said second.
Commissioner Vallister.
Yes.
Commissioner Robinson.
Yes.
Commissioner Santner.
Yes.
Commissioner Molinar.
Yes.
Commissioner Livingston.
Yes.
Commissioner McCarter.
Yes.
And Commissioner Rodriguez.
Yes.
Great. Motion passes.
Okay. Then the last item that was pulled is item number 23, And this was discussed at length last time as well. I think the goal was to have this ability to talk about enhancing local commerce within the context of successful commercial ground floors. So Commissioner Livingston, did you pull this one?
I pulled this. And Zeri, I have thought about this a lot since we last had a conversation on this item. And every time I read this, I find myself thinking, always coming to the same conclusion, which is that the second sentence here reads, they provide large storefront windows, interesting signage, multiple entries, outdoor seating, and retail displays. Large storefront windows covers the commerce issue from my perspective. The large storefront windows are the first item. They are so critically important to a successful public realm that we've put them first in the sentence. And it really is all about creating that great storefront. And maybe it's large storefront windows that enhance commerce, but it makes me a little bit uncomfortable to put the word commerce in an actual guideline.
So how about to enhance the viability of the commercial or retail, whatever that is? The reason I brought this is that we do a lot of that for the sake of public realm, for the sake of pedestrians. And having a successful retail or commercial, that's why commerce, I use the word commerce, is part of it. It's very important to that. Now, we are suggesting a lot of approaches to making that front edge not only pleasant to pedestrian, but also increasing the viability of that commercial space. So is it the word local commerce versus the retail or commercial space that is there that is bugging you?
For me, it's that it's limiting. It's the way that the sentence is written. It's saying that you're providing all this stuff to enhance local commerce. So I don't have to provide it if I don't need to enhance local commerce because there's no local commerce. It's making it apply to fewer cases than just a general application, I think. And for me, that's a problem.
If it read retail displays that enhance local commerce, would that make it feel less like that's the intent? That's the intent.
You know, and more I know where you guys are. I know where you guys are going, but I also like to think of what is our purview as design commissioners. It's design. Whether or not this ends up local commerce or some other kind of commerce is kind of out of our purview. So
yeah, that's the other thing.
Programmatic.
But the fact is, if that commercial retail or whatever fails, then, and it's an empty space, or it's a space that with the shades drawn, then what you were trying to achieve with the guidelines, you haven't. You have your storefront, you have your window, but you don't have that.
But that's not the fault of the guidelines. That's the fault of the economy or other factors, I guess.
Because the guidelines have provided large storefront windows, interesting signage, multiple entries, outdoor seating, and retail displays.
Yeah, they can't guarantee successful commerce.
The greatest thing that we can do as design commissioners is to provide a great space with all the great transparency, the multiple entries, all that kind of stuff, and then it's up to the marketplace and economic conditions and everything else to populate those. And the best spaces are the ones that even if somebody moves out, they're designed well enough that somebody else can move in and make a success out of it, I guess.
Well, I guess I'm going to be the one person who's is in disagreement with you, which is fine. I don't want to belabor this.
Let's hear from Chandra and Don and Sam as well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any objection to enhanced local commerce. It's sort of the purpose of what all this is about. So just like a good design enhances the public realm, et cetera, et cetera. So this a well-designed storefront enhances local commerce. I don't see a whole lot of issues with that. So I'm in support of Zari's position.
Sam?
I'm ambivalent. I mean, I don't know if commerce needs to even be said, because at the end of the day, you know, commerce, I mean, we're tasked to create great ground floor. And yeah, if commerce or you know, building a programs or whatever it is, you know, that's what we're tasked with. And whether it's commerce or not, it's really the market, the sub-market, the you know, the street, the where it is. I mean, it's a whole lot of things that we don't control. So
yeah,
it could be in there, but it doesn't have to be in there for me. So I'm kind of agnostic about it.
I mean, wouldn't we want to do the same thing if it was Walgreens or CVS going into a building?
Right.
And that's not local commerce. That's national commerce.
But that's a good example. For example, if you have a Walgreens going in, right, they don't want any windows.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Chandra?
So we would make them have windows.
You're muted.
I'm muted. That's sad. I thought I was trying to interject a few times, but I'm muted. That's why it never works. Did you not want to use the words that were there before, the successful commercial ground floors, and you wanted it to specifically say enhance local commerce? More specific about what's the program that's in there?
Well, you know, what my intent was, and maybe this is not the right place, is that we constantly are focusing on, in terms of public realm and the facade of the building, ground floor, pedestrian, and all of that. But there is also, through design, we need to make sure that the ground floor spaces that are used for commerce, for commercial purposes, I don't know, whatever they are, that they are done in such a way that they also enhance the commercial viability of whatever entity that's there. That was my intent. And through all these various conversations, this is where we've ended up.
Right. Because I feel like, you know, if folks don't like the word commerce, I mean, I think the language is still there, right? We're talking about all these things, you know, multiple entries, outdoor seating, retail displays that are contributing to the success of those businesses. Maybe it's just contributing to the success of, or contributing to successful ground floors. It's some of the same language that was already in there. I think you can still say that you're providing those things because it makes it more successful in that location without saying it's about commerce or it's about whatever else, right? It's just a successful ground floor. I don't necessarily have an objection to the word commerce, but it is really specific. So successful commercial ground floors.
You know, the thought just occurred to me too, that retail displays is not something that we control as design commissioners. That's the merchant.
That's funny. Yeah, I just had that exact same thought, Brian. storefront windows, interesting signage, multiple entries, outdoor seating.
I mean, we don't.
You could say visual displays.
But interesting signage. I mean, you have to get a sign permit, but that's
what
we're looking at. That's a different thing. So it could still be boring signage.
But this also is not necessarily, let's see. Successful commercial ground floors.
And outdoor seating, we do ask people to show that in our drawing. Mm-hmm. That we know how it's going to be used. I think that one is included.
I think if we change it to visual displays, that works. If it's, because we do kind of ask for that, whether it's commercial or an amenity space or something, we ask that there be something in the window that's active. And I think visual displays works for that, and it works for retail without being so specific.
Is visual display something that's designed into the ground floor of the building, or is it?
It's not core and shell. It's not. It's like furniture. It's fly work that you do.
That's correct. Yeah.
That's a good point. Maybe we just take it out. Maybe less is more and we just take that part out.
Is this paragraph broader than the design guideline? Is this establishing a broader context for the application of the guideline? Ground floors should be tall and full of light and air, welcoming passersby as an extension of the public sidewalk, facilitating movement and interaction between people. I mean, the guidelines achieve all of this.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at the photograph above, it's got multiple entries. It's got a tall ground floor. It's got the right percentage of glazing. Probably even has great sign. Yeah, it has good signage down there. You can see it at the end, and it has outdoor seating. I guess the one thing we didn't describe in this sentence is weather protection.
Weather protection, exactly.
Which shows up in the photograph, and we oftentimes are encouraging that.
We did add that to building facades.
Oh, okay.
We discussed that last time.
Thank you, Jessica.
I remembered from last time.
Okay.
So there's two issues here. One is that Commissioner Molinar just brought up, which is that this maybe needs to change to say visual displays. That's one thing. And then we still need to get back to this notion of commerce.
And it's 7:23, so we want to wrap up quickly. I'm just going to ask everybody to do a quick survey. I support visual displays and otherwise leaving the language as it stands.
Agreed.
Well, I'm fine with that.
I don't even think visual displays need to be in there, but I'm fine with it if folks are into it.
I will live with it.
Okay, I think we're ready for a motion and a second for item number
23.
Item number 23. The only change to item number 23 is to change the word retail to visual.
Displays or visual.
Okay, I move to amend the revised proposed draft with item number 23 as written.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Commissioner Robinson?
Yes.
Commissioner Zantner?
Yeah.
Commissioner McCarter?
Yes.
Commissioner Rodriguez?
Yes.
Commissioner Livingston?
Yes.
Commissioner Ballester?
Yes.
And Commissioner Molinar?
Yes.
Great. Motion passes.
Wow. Okay. Let's all take a collective breath. We do have one more vote, but I know that everybody's just... The hard part is over, you guys.
Thank you, Laura.
An excellent moment.
Thank you.
Thank you all. So there were three things left. There was the final vote, and there are two items in that final vote. And then if we felt like doing a reflection, and that is on Commissioner Livingston, that's on you to just kind of like gauge everyone's, how everyone's feeling.
Laura, can I suggest that you pull up the annotated, the run of show, and maybe just show what this final vote is, because it's the big vote.
Yes.
And that might just help, since these commissioners are so visually oriented.
You are. Can you all see my screen? It's got my yellow highlights, so.
Yep.
Sorry about that. Okay. Right, so there's two parts to this. One is, if you recall, the DOSA is an entire package, right? It's not just the guidelines, it's also the code. And when we did the proposed draft, we had a staff report that described the rationale and the parity between the tools. And now you all have done a lot of shifting and changing, and we just need to revise this thing to reflect all of our hopes and desires and aspirations and all the discussions that we have had in the past few months. So that's what the first bullet is about. We haven't spent much time with this, but that's what that's doing, helping us to shape that around this new revised proposed draft. And you would be asking us to, well, I guess you already did that. So then the second one is just recommending that City Council adopt the staff report as you have directed staff to amend it to reflect our discussions, and to adopt the guidelines shown here in the revised proposed draft dated May 2020 with the amendments that we just discussed. So somebody would just need to make a motion.
Okay, so, but we have not, we need to do the motion and the vote for directing staff to revise volume one. Everything that we just discussed was volume three. So there's still some work to be done in volume one to align it with volume three. So that's first. And then second, the whole package is recommended to council, right?
Correct. But you don't need to see the changes in volume one.
We do not need to see the changes in volume
one. Yes.
No. And you don't need to vote on both.
And okay, so we can do all of this with one motion.
Correct.
Okay, so I move that the Portland Design Commission ask staff to make revisions to DOSA Volume 1, the staff report, to bring it into alignment with Volume 3, the Portland Citywide Design Guidelines. Following that work, we would like staff in the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability to take the proposed draft of Volume 1 and the guidelines as we have discussed today to City Council for discussion and adoption.
Great. Is there, Commissioner Sam, that was you?
Yeah.
Second, okay. Okay, Commissioner Vallister.
Yes. I'm sorry, can I just interject? It's also sure. The revised proposed draft that's dated on May 2020 as amended, because you just incorporated all of these amendments.
Okay, so in my voice, the revised proposed draft dated May 2020 as amended.
Correct. Okay. Thank you.
I second. Great.
Commissioner Vallister?
Yes.
Commissioner Robinson?
Yes.
Commissioner Santner?
Yes.
Commissioner McCarter?
Yes.
Commissioner Molinar?
Yes.
Commissioner Rodriguez?
Hi.
And Commissioner Livingston?
Yes.
Excellent. Motion passes unanimously.
So a question. From here on, we will not hear anything about DOSA. Except the news that the council has adopted it, and in what form or shape, correct?
Not quite. I can talk about next steps here, okay. If that kind of helps. So, and after, it's on the screen, so you can read along with me.
Okay.
So, just so you know, and Commissioner Spivak is here, the PSC is making their final vote, so they are voting on all of the rest of the code. as a package on July the 14th, and they will also spend some time reflecting. They did have a chance to do that the last time we met. They spent some time at the very end of their votes, just reflecting on kind of what goals is DOSA accomplishing. We expect that after that happens, the PSC and Design Commission chairs would come together to just discuss what their final recommendations were, maybe discuss and share some of the reflections that they had at the end. Because both commissions, and I kind of described this in my memo, but both commissions will be drafting a transmittal memo because you are authorizing us, BPS, to make the changes. And once those changes are made, it becomes this new recommended draft that gets published with your transmittal memo because it's your recommendation. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then you would be invited, and we can talk about it when it gets closer, but you would be an invited testimony to forward your recommendation to City Council.
So Laura, I'm thinking that that transmittal memo is something that is produced in September or August?
We'd recommend producing it like pretty soon while your head, you're still thinking about these conversations so we don't lose momentum and things are fresh in your mind. You could go ahead and start producing it now, but I'm not sure exactly how the PSC letter and the Design Commission letter, if they're going to be completely independent of one another or if there's going to be some commonality to both of them. And so for that reason, I would recommend you go ahead and draft it now, but wait to sign it and finalize it until after the Planning Commission has their reflection and discussion on July 14th. So then at that point, they can draft theirs also, and we can see, oh, they provided a real point that we want to highlight also, you know?
It makes sense to do some coordinated work around this, and it also makes sense to not delay to the point that we lose our thinking around DOSA and everything that we've discussed in the recent past. But I do think that the Design Commission needs some time on an agenda in the not-too-distant future to have some more conversation about what we put in this transmittal. What are the highlights that we want to be sure we address?
I'll jump in. That's exactly what our next PSC meeting will be about, is really, we've gone through the items, our many amendment ideas, and we'll be talking about what to include in the letter, basically. So we'll have that available to share right then. Or if you've done your office already, then that would be great.
Okay. I don't have our agenda
in front of me for the next several weeks,
but we're going to need some time.
Were you thinking you wanted to set it right now, Julie, or?
Well, we don't, but I want to know how full our agenda is to be sure that we can get this done, you know, like within the next month.
Is that a deadline we need, like within the next 30 days?
Well, I'm hearing from staff that sooner is better than later, and we don't want to forget. We don't want to defer this to the point that we forget what we want
to say. That's our experience, is to do it sooner helps the commissioners, you know, bring their thinking into the letter. And I don't know how you all do letter writing. I think the PSC sometimes does a round robin of just off the top of their heads, like these are the main things. And then we go and we write it and it's done mainly via email. But I think you all have more of a tradition of talking about it during a meeting, but I'm not positive.
Do we have to have a actually public hearing, public meeting to talk about what we want to include that in the letter?
You can't have a discussion through a quorum. So for the PSC, for example, we send it to them and then they give staff feedback so that there isn't a quorum discussing it via email.
Okay. But if we all want to discuss it, Zaria, we need to do it on a hearing date.
I see.
So sometimes what we do is we get pieces from all the commissioners, we put it together and we draft it, and then we bring the draft to the full commission to give, you know, feedback and finalize it.
Julie, I'm kind of channeling Tim. I don't think it's critical to actually find the hearing date that we can fit this in. I think we can have this discussion early next week and try to figure out how we're going to do it, maybe as items of interest or another forum. But since it's getting late, maybe we could utilize the time to go over the last item, and then we can coordinate with you next week.
Perfect.
Okay.
And the last item was really, I mean, because we already jumped ahead to the next steps. So the only other thing that we haven't done, and this is up to you all if you have the energy and just kind of want to do a quick reflection round robin on what you think might be included in the transmittal memo. So what are the goals that you feel we're accomplishing here with this new revised proposed draft, new design guidelines? I had put a few thoughts together, so that was on my cheat sheet that you guys saw on the screen. But in your own words, if you wanted to just spend some time to reflect.
Would you mind pulling up those the guidance that you had?
Sure. I didn't want to
influence.
Necessarily, yeah. I mean, these were just like, if there was these are the things that resonated to me. Yeah. You know, these are changes, certainly sea changes from our current design guidelines. You know, we don't talk about a citywide context the way we're talking about it so intentionally in these new design guidelines. We talk about context today as being just like what's there. And I think people get stumped, and this is looking ahead to the future and what's the aspiration of the place. So that's, we're talking about social and cultural context. We talked about that quite a bit today. I feel like that's light years ahead of what the current design guidelines are. So it's not just the physical and the built environment and natural environment. It's also about the social and culture. It's about the people. And this is that third bullet is really, we discussed this a lot about the character of the place, meaning to amplify it and not diminish it, not delete it. And then our guidelines that we just, that you just recommended, do a tremendous service to site design. And I think the old thinking was that the design of the building sort of stops at the sidewalk, and all we care about is the facade. And I think what we sort of, we're carrying forward design guidelines that think about the whole site and the user experience of the whole site. And that's definitely a breakthrough. And then of course the climate and resilience piece of these design guidelines is sort of bringing us all into sort of the 21st century places for people in the city of Portland. So those were just my thoughts, and I just jotted these down.
Really, I gotta go. Everybody here is at home except me. I'm in my office and I need to get home. So I'll just start. I mean, I'm not going to use your book, because all I'm going to say is it's been a great experience to discuss, you know, in detail, looking forward, all of these different sort of switches that we're talking about to try and create something that someone can pick up and understand what we're trying to achieve at Design Review. And for that, I wanted to thank the staff, Laura, and all the staff for all the hard work, because it's the amount of work that's gone into this is pretty amazing. And I think the result is going to be resilient in time, and I hope it is. So with that, I'll leave you, and congratulations, you all.
See you, Sam. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Laura, this has been a huge undertaking. Thank you very much. And I have no idea when we actually started this. If I had access to my office, I would have done a bunch of research, because I think DOZA started the same month I did. And it's been challenging for the duration. This is tough stuff, right? It's tough for staff. It's it's a lot for the commission to kind of wrap their minds around. I think the product that we have with these new citywide design guidelines is really clear and crisp and implementable. And even better, I think that they are going to be a great foundation for the work that lies ahead, because there is more to be done, right? And it's eventually folks will turn their focus to the Central City Fundamentals and all of the other planned districts. And this is a strong document to take into all of those future conversations. So I really appreciate working with you.
Thank you.
And I think you do really good work. Thank you for that.
I want to echo what's been said. For me, this has been extremely educational, and I can't even fathom the idea and the skills that you all have shown in really taking this like volumes of input from everybody and then trying to condense it into, I don't know, how many pages are these? Not that many pages, and very clear, very understandable. And I think most importantly, is when I was reviewing these, I was reviewing from the perspective of an architect or a designer. Okay, if I have this, does this mean anything to me? Can I use it as a guide to do my work? And I think you have done it, and that's an incredible job. So thank you for all of your hard work, and thank you for actually listening to us. And then some of us are not as articulate and as have command of the words and that you do, and but you have been able with all of your work to really capture the essence of what we've been saying to you. And in that context, I think I look at the goal of DOZA. One thing that I remember very clearly was that, there were specific goals that came out of the various studies that were done prior, looking at previous guidelines and listening to developers and community members, and then there were some specific. So it would be very important that whatever these transmittal letters are, to make reference to what the goals, those goals were, and how these guidelines are or are not meeting those goals. So to sort of put it in the context of the whole, the study itself. And also recognizing, I mean, acknowledging that things change in our society, and they change very fast. And the fact that it's been, what, how many years? 2003, it's been like 18 years since we revisited the design guidelines. That the city needs to make an attempt to be more in line with the changes, societal changes that are being made, so that it is, our built environment is in aligned with the community's aspirations. So we don't lag behind so much. So I think that's another thing that I would like to see to be included in the letter.
I want to echo that. It's a colossal piece of work, Laura and Sandra. I don't know how you had the patience to get this far with it, but and also want to thank Zeri and Julie and Jessica for, you certainly put a lot more time into this than I did. I couldn't quite find the bandwidth, but it's a heck of a piece of work. It's, my hat's off to you guys.
I think it's great to have you know, been part of this process and see all of these changes, because I grew up in Portland and it looked the same in a lot of areas for a really long time. And then once it started to develop a lot and new neighborhoods grew up like the Pearl and a lot of changes happened on Division, I feel like it still was feeling like Portland. Not Division. I bring up Division because there's a lot of changes. A lot of crazy things happened on Division that I don't appreciate. And I'm really glad that now that area is going to get some more, you know, guidance, right? Because that's what really keeps things looking like Portland, the way that, you know, I know and love, but also, you know, has changed and grown, which I love. I love all of that. So I think it's been really great for me to, you know, be a part of this process with you putting together this, you and your team putting together this whole draft. And I really appreciate being able to sort of reach out and provide guidance to other parts of the city that that we're just not going to see, you know, and have some level of confidence that that design teams will have enough guidance to make something great for the communities that they're in.
So we get to do this all over again on Central City?
We probably don't.
Wow.
Can I just say that I feel really fortunate to have been part of this process, and the process has made me feel really fortunate to live in Portland, because this isn't a very common process for cities, I don't think. At least I'm from Texas, and definitely not. We don't do this in Texas. So I really have learned so much, and I really appreciate all of the time and effort and patience and everything else that you guys have put into this. It's incredible. Laura and Sandra and Phil and Stacy, you guys are amazing. Thank you so much. I'm really happy that we're almost done too.
I'll chime in for a moment. I really appreciate working with our two commissions together, and in respect to Commissioner Sandner's point of not having this come back to you anytime soon, I don't think it will, but we didn't get it. I'm sure we wouldn't have gotten it perfect with this round. And as part of our recommendations, we have a recommendation that we do learn some lessons from actual adult development, we do need to change the standards, maybe the guidelines, that will once again be a dual commission process. We figured out how to do it this time. There may be some need for tweaks, and I think we've set the stage well for working out those tweaks if and when we need to do them. So I think it's been great working together. And a special thanks, in addition to the people we've mentioned so far, is the people who participated in the 3x3 discussions. That was an additional time commitment. And I wasn't actually part of that group, but I know that they did a good job, because for each of these design guidelines you've mentioned, there is a corresponding design standard, some mandatory, some with points. And that wasn't by accident. That took a lot of concerted effort to coordinate those two processes. So thank you for that.
Well, I'd want to thank staff for all the work they put into this thing and all the wordsmithing, particularly Laura's good wordsmithing. I mean, ever since I was on the commission, I thought the goal of finally the design guidelines and intentions should be to reduce that thick volume down to a something that's comprehensible. I mean, as an architect, it's really hard to take a look at that thing and do anything with it, really. It's just so thick, and it meanders, and it's confusing sometimes and contradictory. So to have the three main design tenets guide everybody's work, I think, is the critical thing. You can add a few goals from the various design overlays, etc., but this has to be the main part that people relate to. And I think even architects can deal with this one. You know, I mean, as a practicing architect, it's been pretty difficult in the past. And hopefully, I mean, ultimately, the goal is to support and promote good design in the city of Portland. And a lot of that's fairly intangible, despite having great documents. So I hope this is helpful, and will move us towards that goal. I'm not sure if I was on mute or not.
You were not on mute.
We're not on mute.
I think the rest of us are on mute.
I had to put myself on mute because there's all this chaos happening.
A mute group of people I was talking to.
Yeah. We heard you. I think that, is that every commissioner? I think every commissioner has had a moment. Yeah.
Well, we have certainly appreciated having a closer to connection to the commission. And throughout this process, during the assessment, you know, my team would come down when we were in our building to the design commission meetings, and the amount of effort and work that you all do every week for the city as volunteers is astounding. And I know everyone from City Hall all the way to us staff really appreciate it. And it's been really fun to work with you all and collaborate throughout this whole time. I've really enjoyed being behind Laura as she's leading our charge. So I wanted to thank her specifically for being such a great listener and collaborator and great writer. I mean, are all urban designers good writers? I don't think so.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like a twofer. It's like awesome. So congratulations, Laura. It's great. And I really, I want to thank Stacey Monroe too, who has been with us since the inception of the DOZA assessment, also with a consultant and being our right-hand person for BDS. And we could go to her, and she's been super responsive and wonderful to work with also.
You know, Sandra, thanks for pointing out everybody who is currently working on this project. Phil, Stacy, Laura, of course, front and center, you, the consultants at DECA. I think Cassie Ballou has also worked on this, and there are other people that commission doesn't see very often who have been very involved in this as well. And then there are some folks who have changed jobs that have, you know, kind of floated through DOZA and have left, and they have definitely left left fingerprints on the document as well. So it has been a really big, significant effort by a lot of people.
I would also be remiss if I didn't mention Kara Fioravanti, who was my right-hand person during this whole project. So she's not here. Hopefully she's drinking a margarita somewhere. But I just want to make sure we get that on the record.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you, Kara.
Well, and thank you all. I definitely echo, I don't want to belabor, but it's been such a pleasure working with you all. And I just appreciate all the hours and hours of work that you put into not only DOZA and not only in the hearings room, but all the other hours you put in and now at home. I really appreciated getting to know you better. And I hope that you see your mark on this document. And I do believe that it is a 30-year document. I think that it stands, it will stand. You know, these three tenants are a really good foundation for the work that we did together. So I just appreciate you all putting all of your effort into this.
Thank you.
Well, Julie, okay, you can adjourn if you're ready.
Yep,
unless you want to hang out a little longer. We just turn off the recording and just transition.
In the absence of further words from anyone, I think that is the end of this hearings date. Good. Is that true? Everybody give me a nod? Yeah. Fantastic. Okay, it is 7:54 and we are adjourned.
All right. Thank you all.
Thank you.